Hello, I'm Tom Hauser. Governor Mark Dayton's last bonding bill is a blockbuster that he says would create thousands of jobs. Republicans see it as more of a budget buster. The governor is pitching a $1.5 billion package of construction projects around the state. About one-third of that would go to the University of Minnesota and other state colleges. The Dayton administration says the public works proposal will create nearly 23,000 jobs. $542 million is proposed for projects at the U of M and Minnesota State Colleges and Universities. The governor also earmarks $171 million for natural resources projects and $167 million for clean water initiatives. Now, the governor also proposes $53 million to clean up a landfill in Burnsville just off Interstate 35. That landfill stopped accepting waste in the early 90s, but it's known to be filled with toxic garbage and hazardous levels of methane gas. The governor is also proposing the state spend $30 million on revitalizing Fort Snelling before its 2020 bicentennial. The governor was ill the other day when this was announced, so his commissioner of management and budget made the sales pitch.
He wanted a robust bonding bill. We understand that we'll have to take a look at the assets available in the February forecast, and we hope that we'll have enough resources to fully fund this bonding bill.
There is very little transportation funding in the proposal, but it does include nearly $13 million to shore up the historic Stone Arch Bridge in downtown Minneapolis. It is now only used for pedestrians and bike lanes. And again, this is just the starting point for negotiations with the legislature. Senator David Senjum, the Republican chair of the Senate Capital Investment Committee, says the governor's proposal, quote, busts the budget. He says Republicans will propose much more funding for transportation infrastructure in their proposal. This week, we found out Amazon is out of the running for a location for the retailer's second headquarters. I should say Minnesota is out of the running. The company says it has outgrown Seattle and has been looking for areas to build a second headquarters. Now the company has narrowed a list of 238 potential locations down to 20.
To receive a business-like proposal without the gimmicks and the gadgetry and all the sensational PR stuff.
You'll recall when Governor Dayton announced details of the state's proposal back in October, he said it offered no major tax incentives. Chicago, on the other hand, offered a reported $2.2 billion in incentives. The city unveiled drawings of the area where it would like to see the headquarters built. And unlike smaller communities that are still in the running, like Indianapolis and Columbus, Chicago leaders say it can handle the 50,000 jobs Amazon promises to bring. This week, Republican State Senator Karen Housley officially entered the race for the U.S. Senate seat held by Tina Smith.
I'm running because we're tired of politicians that don't get anything done. We're tired of the bickering, and we're tired of the partisan politics. I'm running because I want to ensure that today's young people have good-paying jobs, have a chance to own a home, and can feel safe from terrorists both at home here and abroad.
Housley also talked about making sure kids get an education without drowning in debt, protecting Social Security, and fixing veterans programs. This campaign kickoff event was at the Water Street Inn in Stillwater. So far, Democratic Senator Tina Smith is the only other major candidate for the U.S. Senate seat. Tina Smith was appointed to the seat by Governor Dayton and took office earlier this month after Al Franken's resignation. A special election for the seat will be held in November. Sophia Vulu is the first Hmong judge in Minnesota. She serves in Ramsey County District Court. The new judge told us she is proof the dream of life, liberty, and justice for all will always be possible in America.
I hope that people, when they enter the legal system, will feel, regardless of who they are, will feel that they were respected, will feel that they were heard, and will feel that there was an attempt to try to treat them with dignity.
Judge Vulu came to this country as a refugee. Her father died during the Vietnam War. She is one of seven children. She says her family arrived with nothing and survived off the kindness of strangers. She wanted to become a lawyer and then a judge so she could give back. A record number of Minnesotans signed up for health insurance through MinSure. According to the state's insurance exchange, 116,358 Minnesotans have enrolled for 2018 coverage. Last year, nearly 115,000 signed up, despite this year's open enrollment period being shorter by 3 weeks. MinSure officials also reported more than 60% of enrollees qualified for tax credits. Those tax credits averaged $4,800 to $12,000. Minneapolis police are finalizing security plans for Super Bowl 52. Chief Madaria Arredondo gave a presentation to city council members Thursday on what residents and guests can expect. While Minneapolis police lead these efforts, the department is getting a lot of help from the federal government and also 60 different law enforcement agencies here in the state. Chief Arredondo says the most obvious changes are barriers around places like U.S. Bank Stadium, the Convention Center, and Nicollet Mall. There will also be an increase in police presence in those places. He told city leaders he's confident in their plans, but also cautious.
I think you would ask any chief of police in any city in today's day and time, it's the unknown. And so, but for everything that has gone into this planning, I feel very confident that we will have a safe Super Bowl.
Chief Arredondo also says he does not expect any impact on the city's 911 system. All department personnel are either on duty or are on standby to step in and help in the event of a serious incident. Meanwhile, the perimeter is already going up around U.S. Bank Stadium. Friday, the MSFA held a meeting about safety and the stadium. For ticket holders on game day, the goal is to create the smoothest entry in Super Bowl history. For the first Super Bowl in history, a light rail system will play a major role in the day of entry. About 15,000 ticketed fans at the Mall of America will go through intense screenings there before boarding the train for a nonstop ride into the perimeter. Police will be on the train and along the route for safety.
All safety and security and all public safety for the Super Bowl rests with local authorities, not with the federal government, but in this case, the Minneapolis Police Department as the lead law enforcement agency. That's true out on the streets, at all the events, and also at U.S. Bank Stadium on game day.
And starting tomorrow, things will look really different. Super Bowl logos are already popping up, but next week we'll also see team logos going up around downtown once we know the winners of today's games. Let's hope there's a lot of purple. As an added measure, more than 10,000 Crew 52 volunteers are also being trained by the Minneapolis Police Department to recognize and report suspicious activity. Training began earlier this month and is expected to wrap up on Monday. Volunteers will put their new skills to the test when Super Bowl festivities kick off next Friday. Coming up in 2 minutes, we remember and honor Sarah Janicek, who contributed to At Issue for so many years. It is safe to say things will never quite be the same here on the set of At Issue. Last week, a beloved contributor to our At Issue political panels for 18 years passed away suddenly. Sarah Janicek left us way too soon. And joining me now, Ember Reichgott-Young and Sarah Janicek.
Sarah Janicek was a key contributor to our At Issue team since we first went on the air in 2000. She was bright and often blunt.
Democrats are making a gross miscalculation. This is not a partisan issue.
This was Sarah's last appearance on At Issue on December 10th. She was an astute observer of the political landscape, like when Governor Dayton needed to choose someone to replace Senator Al Franken.
I think that it absolutely has to be a woman, yes, on the DFL side. And I can't imagine that it's not Tina Smith.
Not long after that show, Sarah embarked on a trip of a lifetime to Argentina, Chile, and Brazil over the holidays to celebrate her 57th birthday. She fell ill shortly after arriving in Argentina. This is the last picture Sarah posted of herself on Facebook. And it is so, Sarah, carefree and enjoying life to the fullest.
And that is absolutely true. As you both know, Sarah was a free spirit. When she came breezing into this studio every day, you, A, never knew what she was going to be wearing, and B, what she had on her mind. And she was just such a delight. And Andy Brehm and Catherine Tannucci here for political analysis. In seats often occupied by Sarah Janicek, we're going to talk about Sarah just for a moment. And Andy, for Republicans, she was a stalwart in terms of getting the Republican message out.
Well, when I was growing up in Republican politics, I always knew who Sarah was. She had a great political mind. She was an excellent writer. But she also had a very kind and gentle heart. When I started doing some political commentary, she took me under her wing and gave me some pointers that I still use today. So she was a dear friend. She was a great asset to the Republican Party. She fought hard for her side of the aisle, but also got along well with Democrats and kind of in an age when people could get along in politics. So I was very proud to know her.
And Catherine, one of the pictures I found on her Facebook page was from back in 2015. I believe it was Bill Salisbury's retirement party and Governor Dayton there. And Sarah was so proud, she said in the caption on this picture, that she finally got her picture taken with Governor Dayton.
That's a great picture. I love that. I think I was at that party, too. And it reminds me of a time, I can tell you that Governor Dayton admired Sarah very much, and I know he said that in a statement last week, but I think it was in 2009, during the campaign, Governor Dayton's first campaign for governor, the three of us had lunch, and he asked her out to lunch and brought me with and introduced me to Sarah as someone that he would turn to for advice on occasion, and he admired her very much and suggested to me gently that she's someone that I could look up to and maybe learn a few things from. And though we weren't close, she was very generous, and I did learn a lot from her too and admired her greatly.
And while she was a Republican, she often was willing and able to point out when Republicans were doing things wrong, and she was not shy about letting them know it.
Well, and I've tried to follow her example, but she was true to her principles. She was true to her values. And so she was a strong Republican, fought hard for it. But yes, when the party took directions that she didn't agree with, she was fine to say it.
Well, Sarah is going to be missed. There's no question about that. So I'm glad we had a few minutes to talk about her today. Now let's do what she would have loved to have been doing right now and analyze some poll numbers. Let's take a look at some Star Tribune Minnesota poll numbers in the governor's race. This is on the Democratic side. You see Tim Walz, currently a congressman running for governor, at 21%. Oddly enough, Lori Swanson, who has not even announced she's running, the attorney general, at 16%. Then St. Paul Mayor Chris Coleman, state auditor Rebecca Otto. And then you see Aaron Murphy, Paul Thiessen, and Tina Liebling rounding out the numbers here. Catherine, what do you glean from this? Tim Walz, I think a lot of people have thought he was the front runner. This might indicate that he is.
It might. I think it shows mostly that this race is still incredibly fluid and people are not paying a lot of attention to it yet, notably because the number two person on that list is not in the race, in fact, yet. Though widely expected that that the attorney general will run for governor, it hasn't happened yet. And so there's a lot of room for those numbers to change. And fundraising numbers, these polling numbers show that Congressman Walz and former Mayor Chris Coleman have put together strong campaigns. Those bear out in these polling numbers as well.
Let's take a look at some Republican numbers. Again, these are from the Minnesota poll in the Star Tribune that were published this week. Jeff Johnson, who was the candidate a few years ago, he is leading the pack at 24%. And again, Andy, somebody who's not in the race yet, Kurt Dowd, 14%, followed by Julie Rosen, Matt Dean, who won a straw poll recently, and then Keith Downey and Mary Giuliani. Stevens, what do you make of these numbers?
Well, I think it's similar to what was said earlier. I think the race is still extremely fluid. Jeff has a lot of support. He's working hard. I think he's running a good campaign. But again, I don't know if he has the strong kind of enthusiasm that to give him the kind of front runner status that I think he'd like. I'd love to see Speaker Dowd get in, but it's questionable whether he will. So very fluid race, and I think that's a good thing. We're going to have a contest, and the strongest candidate will come out of it.
And I think what you mean is Jeff Johnson has enthusiasm, but you don't know that the voters have enthusiasm for him because he's already run once, right?
Well, right. I mean, again, he's running a good campaign, but he doesn't seem to have this groundswell of support. I think there are a lot of Republicans that are still looking for someone, myself included, to get behind.
And final thing, Governor Tim Pawlenty said this week that he's not going to run for the U.S. Senate, but he has not said he has not ruled out a race for governor yet.
Very notably, he has not ruled out another race, that being the governor's race. And he, I'm sure, is hearing from a lot of Republicans, like, not suggesting that Andy's called him, but Republicans like Andy looking for a candidate, kind of waiting to see who else might get in the race.
Last 10 seconds. Have you called Governor Pawlenty and urged him to run?
I would love to see Governor Pawlenty run.
Yeah, and he would change the numbers dramatically on that Republican side. So, again, these poll numbers are early, but they do give us a snapshot of where things stand right now. Andy and Catherine, thanks for being here, and thanks for sharing your kind thoughts about Sarah Janicek.
Happy to.
Face Off is next. We'll be back in 2 minutes. Plus, the big upset in western Wisconsin in a special election. What does that mean for Republicans? A Democrat scored a big upset in a special election for a state Senate seat in western Wisconsin. A Republican who left the seat to join Governor Walker's administration will now be replaced by a Democrat, and Republicans call it a wake-up call.
Hudson, Wisconsin is part of a Senate district that in recent years has been about as reliably Republican as you'll find anywhere in the state. Until now. Democrat Patty Shockner seems to have shocked the GOP.
Did Patty shock the system?
Not for the people who supported her.
Carol Hardin voted for Shockner and proudly posted a campaign sign in her front yard, ignoring what she says was a barrage of negative mailers from outside groups.
Definitely the underdog. Just historically, the fact that it has been GOP for so long.
We spoke by phone to Shockner, who was already on her way to a school boards association meeting in Milwaukee. She said her campaign strategy was pretty simple. In an era of nasty politics, she was just being nice.
I just really wanted to run a campaign that just was, focused on Wisconsin values and kindness and helping people.
Although this special election result is a bit shocking for this part of western Wisconsin, it's a bit too soon to say that it's a sign of things to come. Turnout was dramatically lower in this special election than it was during the last general election.
In 2016, more than 89,000 voters cast ballots in Senate District 10, and Republican Sheila Harsdorf won 63% of them. In the 2018 special election, just over 11,000 votes were cast, and Republican Adam Jarko won just 44%. The upset got the attention of Republican Governor Scott Walker.
It's a wake-up call that we can't just assume that everyone knows about the positive things we're getting done for the people of Wisconsin. We've got to spell it out.
Carol Hardin says all the negativity about President Trump might have also played a part.
People don't like that anymore. They're tired of it.
And I'm joined now by former current DFL strategist Sarah Walker. I don't want to dismiss you that quickly. And Republican strategist Brian McDaniel for Face Off. Thank you both for being here. Brian, let me start with you, because Democrats are painting this as a doomsday, a canary in the coal mine, if you will, for Republicans. Do you see it that way?
Well, Republicans, the party in power always does poorly in midterms. In a special election, it's hard to really say whether this is much of a trend. I think that the Republicans would be very, very... it would be poor to ignore this completely. However, in Minnesota, we have a special election in the Hastings area that could flip from blue to red, and I wouldn't say that was because, President Trump is so well-liked in that area. All politics is local.
And how do you see this?
Well, one thing I will say, Democrats certainly in Minnesota tend to do better in special elections, but in addition, I think there's a lot to do with the enthusiasm that's been driven by the anti-Trump message by the DFL in Minnesota. So I'm not surprised at all by this, and I do think it's an ominous warning for Republicans. That being said, I would also say that one of the interesting things about the Wisconsin campaign is that she really focused. She didn't do anti-Trump bashing. She focused on issues and what she wanted to get done. She talked a lot about finding solutions to the opioid crisis. So I still think the message for Democrats is stay focused on issues.
And the DNC chairman, Tom Perez, even said that this week, that Democrats in 2018 can't just run on an anti-Trump message. They got to say, what are they going to do for voters?
Well, they did everything they could to try to tie everybody in Minnesota to Trump in the last election, and it didn't work. So I would say definitely there was no DFL message, certainly in rural Minnesota, that resonated. They need to find something different.
Now, again, the turnout was quite low in that race, but still the Democrat did very well. The Republican only got 44% out of 11,000 votes, whereas a year and a half ago, 63% went to the Republican out of 89,000. So do you think when the turnout is normal that maybe this won't look so good for Democrats?
Well, I wouldn't go that far, because I remember that I think Trump won that area by 17%. So I don't think you can account for all of this because of low turnout. But the other thing is, again, Democrats are energized and they're already working on field organizing and turning out the vote. And I do feel like Trump has turned off a lot of especially the Minnesota nice voters.
And Republicans are trying to turn the tide by using the tax bill as something that they can point to and say, look what we've done for you. Let's take a look at a poll that was done. Again, the Minnesota poll in the Star Tribune. Minnesotans split right down the middle on this. 43% approve of it, 43% disapprove, 14% undecided. Those numbers are trending in Republicans' direction.
Well, and I think that, first of all, the final tax bill was much better than a lot of the bills that came before it in the House and Senate. So I think that the reason why people like this bill is because there's a lot of really good things that are in it that are new. A lot of really good things that were in current law were kept. And I think that is showing, those poll numbers are showing, the Republicans are doing a much better job of selling the bill And also, corporate America is helping a ton with all the bonuses, promises of repatriating money. So I think we're just doing a better job of selling a good product.
Well, I think the reality is I still think a lot of Minnesotans are really unclear about what's in the tax bill. And I think as this tax season comes about, we'll also see we'll see those numbers changing in one direction or the other. But I think there's provisions like the 20% small business income tax deduction, which is going to also create almost a $1 billion hole for Minnesota. So all these things are going to come to fruition, and I think that's ultimately what's going to decide Minnesota's position.
Just real quick, just 20 seconds on this topic. Once again, people worried about a government shutdown. When is this cycle of government shutdown threats ever going to end?
I wish it would. The art of compromise has been lost, both in Minnesota and on the national level. And it doesn't matter which side's in power. The other side doesn't want to help them. And I think that's the problem.
Is that why we're always facing a potential government shutdown?
Well, yes, I do think we've lost the ability to compromise. But I would also just point out that it hasn't been since Jimmy Carter where one-party rule has ended in a shutdown. And so ultimately, I still see the Republicans, it's their role to compromise and work with Democrats.
All right, just 30 seconds left. I know both of you knew Sarah Janicek. Your thoughts about this wonderful woman who we lost.
Well, I knew her as a lobbyist first, and then I knew her as a fellow pundit. She was somebody who was definitely a unique character in Minnesota. She will not be replaced. She will be missed.
Yeah, and I just would say she just had such a big, overwhelming personality and was just kind to everyone. But I'd also just say, like, I still remember her op-ed piece in the Star Tribune about the bachelor farmer and standing up for the freedom to marry, and that holds a special place in my heart.
And that stood out to a lot of people. I saw a lot of that on social media this week. I'm going to miss her big fur coats that she would always wear here in the studio or over at the state capitol. Sarah Janicek will certainly be dearly missed. Sarah and Brian, thanks for being here. We'll be back in 90 seconds, and we'll tell you about some fun attractions in the Twin Cities because of, you know about this, Super Bowl 52, that's coming here. We'll talk about it in a moment. Super Bowl attractions are taking shape around the Twin Cities. That includes this super slide at CHS Field in St. Paul. The 40-foot tall slope is designed to give people of all ages a wild ride. Tickets are $10 for adults, $5 for kids under 12. The slide officially opens on Thursday. It will be open Tuesdays through Sundays until February 10th. And take a look at this 100-foot tall zip line being constructed over the Mississippi River. You can see crews stringing cable between the shorelines ahead of the zip line's opening day next Friday. Tickets for this high-flying attraction are already sold out. And starting now, you can listen to episodes of At Issue every week on iTunes and Podcast One. We have links posted on our website. Just head to At Issue page at KSTP.com. And it's all the time we have for now. The Vikes are going to bring it home tonight. We'll see you back here again next week for another edition of At Issue.